Hey, 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 we are dancing in the discomfort zone today. Episode 185. Holy crap, we've been dancing for a long time. We are joined today by Candace Elliott of Fortress and Flourish. She's an HR consultant, and HR is, as we joke about, it's a four-letter word to some. And so I wanted to talk about HR. I wanted to talk about having tough conversations and about how the pandemic has changed the workforce and what we can do about it. Because a lot of you may be struggling with being understaffed right now and being needing to retain the people that you have so that you can keep your great talent and hopefully continue to bring in great people and keep them as well. So Candace has some fabulous insights on how to make sure your people feel respected and that they can show up fully to do their jobs as best as possible. So enjoy this fabulous episode with Candace Elliott. All right, we are dancing in the discomfort zone today with Candace Elliott of Fortress and Flourish. Candace, how are you today?
I'm so wonderful, Anne. I'm so grateful to be here with you today.
Yeah, it's great to have you because we're going to talk about something pretty uncomfortable, which is HR. If you're in the HR chair, I know that you deal with a lot of human resource challenges and discomforts. If you're not in the HR chair, I know there's a whole lot of loaded emotional stuff that comes along with that. So I'm thrilled to have you there here to talk about some of that stuff to hopefully sort of just normalize the discomfort, but not the fear around it. One of the things I talk about is that improving your skills reduces the fear and trepidation and discomfort sometimes. So that's what we are here to do. So thank you for your time.
Yes, you're welcome. Moving away from HR as a four-letter word.
Yeah, exactly, right? There's way more letters. Let's change things. So you had talked to me when you first reached out about the pandemic being a crucible for some necessary changes in the workplace. What did you mean by that?
Yeah. So there was an interesting study that came out about a month ago, 2 months ago, by Pew Research that looked into the reasons why people left their jobs in 2021. And I was expecting the pandemic to be the top reason or one of the top reasons for people. But what actually came out is that people left for more pay, or not enough pay, for opportunities for advancement, which is kind of like pay, and then also because of being disrespected at work. And so it just became clear to me that the pandemic wasn't the reason for people making a lot of changes, but it was a condition that happened. And so people decided to make big changes in their lives because it was going on.
Well, yeah. And I think the pandemic had a lot of people stopping and saying, okay, what do I really want in this life? You know, if everything is not as secure as I thought it was and all that. So this doesn't surprise me at all. So let's talk about these two big topics. First of all, pay. There's a significant challenge with the cost of living going up, but pay not. And a lot of people are struggling in a big way now.
Yeah. And there's a very interesting metric to use to measure how much equity you are able to give people through pay. It's called the living wage. And it's a study that's done every year by MIT. And it analyzes what it costs for people's basic living expenses in every county in the United States. So you can go and you can search in the county where you are employing people and find out what the living wage is there. Where I live in Santa Cruz County, the living wage is now close to $28 an hour, and it was $21 an hour last year. And our minimum wage is $15 an hour.
Wow.
So there's a big gap there between the minimum wage and the living wage, which is that in itself is a very difficult place for your employees to live, because they're not able to afford their basic living expenses if they're making between the living wage and the minimum wage. It's just, and they're also not getting any support from the government. So it's kind of a very,
yeah,
Yeah.
Because they're making minimum wage. And so the understanding is that that should be enough. But when you look at the living wage, it's actually not.
Right. And the purpose of having a minimum wage originally 100 years ago was to help to alleviate poverty. And when the minimum wage is less than the living wage, it actually creates the situation where you have people that are more likely to fall into poverty when they're not making the living wage. And that comes with all kinds of other, you know, issues, unstable housing, trauma and abuse and other things.
Well, and if you want your team to show up the best they can at work, they need to have their basic needs met.
Yes.
So
yes, 100%. Having a car that can drive you to and from work, being able to see a doctor if you're sick, having stable housing, being able to buy food. These are the basic sort of safety net that people need in order to be able to really thrive. Right. You have to get that first.
Yeah. Even just to show up and do their jobs in a basic way.
Yeah.
So as an HR consultant and strategist, how do you use this information in informing the HR teams and companies that you work with?
Yeah, so I work with growing organizations to establish transparent systems of pay. So what that looks like is digging into what all the positions are in the organization, as it grows, what the positions are that are likely to be added, and how those positions rank against each other with pay as one of the things that we're looking at. We also look into, because when I work with a smaller organization that's growing, a lot of the pay that happens in the smaller size is really based on the individual. And so you have positions, some will be relatively highly paid for what the person is doing, and some will be relatively lowly paid for what the person is doing. So we go through a process of streamlining what that pay looks like and creating pay bands and steps. So people can really understand what pay is going to look like as they move forward in the organization.
Well, and as you think about people feeling disrespected in a company and leaving as a result, creating that transparency and that honesty and that openness, because around pay, I think would seem to make a big difference. Because when you feel like pay's always been kind of that thing, like you don't talk about it and you only get one chance to negotiate it and you don't know what else anybody else is getting. And it's this really weird, uncomfortable thing. So it sounds like what you're saying is make this a public thing within your organization so you can help build that trust a little bit more.
100%. Yeah. It is, instead of having pay be this like dirty secret that no one ever talks about, that you can't talk about pay, you just put it all out there and you say, this is the system. This is the fairest, most equitable system that we could come up with for our organization. And this is what we're using right now. It's an iterative process. So it's going to change as we move forward. But, you know, this is what we're doing for this year or for the next 3 years. And it's something that is very common. You find it in large organizations like cities and counties and, you know, bigger companies. Unions negotiate for pay in this kind of a way. And what you can do is have a structure that you set up in a particular year, and then you can look at what inflation is and adjust the whole structure based on inflation. And so you can adjust the structure with a percentage across the board or with a dollar amount across the board. And that has different effects on the range of pay for the organization to make it more flat or to increase the range.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like with that transparency, it's a great way to show your team that you care about them and you've thought about this. It's not a random process, to hopefully be able to not only keep the people you got, but to fill. I mean, companies have a huge issue with open roles right now.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And I work with companies also to streamline that hiring process and to really kind of drill down on what the job ad should look like. Because a job description and a job ad are different things. A job ad is meant to entice someone to apply for a role. And a job description is a legal agreement about what the responsibilities of the role are. And that has to be a part of the hiring process, that someone gets the job description, but it's not necessarily the same as the ad. And I always recommend putting the pay on the ad, because then people can self-select out. You know, if the pay is too low, then they're not going to apply. which really you want to be specific about who you're hiring and you want to call out to that person instead of being really broad about like, you know, oh, a lot of different kinds of people can do this job. That is true, but you are really looking for someone with a particular skill set or vision of the world or, you know, all these different pieces.
Yeah, because fitting into the, I mean, filling the position is important and fitting into the culture is even more important. Because you don't want to waste your time. Yeah, we don't want to waste your time hiring and then training somebody and then realizing, oh, this just doesn't work at all.
And in the piece of equity, also looking at the requirements that you have for any job and really thinking like, is this actually a requirement for this job? Or is this just something that I'm putting on this list because I've always done that? You know, maybe a bachelor's degree isn't something that you actually need. Maybe you just need a number of years of experience or the degree, and encouraging people of all different kinds of backgrounds to apply is, I think, really important in increasing the resilience of an organization as you grow, because the more diversity that you have in your employee pool, the better you're going to be able to react to things that are happening outside the organization that are affecting it.
I love it. I love it. Now, I imagine that as a strategist, you get some pushback when you start to offer that maybe we should be paying differently or being more transparent about it. How do you deal with that discomfort and that sort of dissonance in this is the new way that we need to do it post-pandemic, you know, where millennials are now the main workforce and Gen Z is coming up in a big way. We need to manage differently. How do you deal with that? That resistance?
The way that I deal with resistance when it comes up around systems change is to just ask if the person will be willing to try it out. Like, is this something that you might consider trying and see if it works for you? And if it works for you, wonderful. If it doesn't work for you, then don't do it. You know, take the pieces that work and leave the ones that don't. Because not every system is the right answer for every single company, you know? So yeah, take what works and leave what doesn't.
Well, and still in the very agile size of companies that you're working with of 10 and above, 10 people and above, they're still able to really mold things the way they want, not just for them right now, but for them in the future.
Yeah. And if you're in a larger organization, you can start with a department, maybe. A smaller, more agile department and see how it goes there. And then if it goes well, then you kind of duplicate it across the larger organization.
Love it. You know, it's interesting because that's one of the things I talk about when I speak on change. And when I'm doing my keynotes, one of the things I say is, you know, you need to take action. Sometimes it's a small action. You don't have to like burn the ships. You can just head to shore and like leave them back there for a minute because you might want to continue to change some things.
Yeah, you're making me think of my little baby because he just learned how to crawl. And, you know, it took so many tiny little actions over the course of, you know, the 10 months of his life for him to be able to develop this skill of crawling. And now it's like, you know, we're going to be walking in no time. So it's amazing how those tiny actions over time will stack up to amazing results.
Nice. I like that analogy. That's really cool. And the other piece of that is pretty soon as he starts to walk, he's going to fall down a lot, which is also a great lesson for all of us adults because it doesn't always go the way we want.
Oh, yes.
All right. So let's talk about the second piece of this. We talked about the pay being a reason and advancement and all that stuff being a reason that people are leaving companies. Let's talk about this other piece, disrespected at work. What do you think's happening?
Yeah. Well, there are so many ways that people are disrespected at work. Pay is one that we've already talked about. For some populations, microaggressions are something that they deal with every single day. For other populations, harassment at work is something that is just the way that it is. For some people, it is just, you know, the mechanisms of a very top-down hierarchical structure and the demanding work environment. And in this, you know, people, it's around 50% of people left jobs or said a reason why they left their position during 2021 was because they were disrespected at work, that it was a major reason why they left. And so I think what has happened through the course of the pandemic is we all collectively as a society have had a lot of conversations around boundaries and around what we are and are not comfortable doing with our bodies physically in the world. And I think that has sort of moved its way into the way that we're talking about boundaries generally, and speaking up and voting with our job to leave that job and go to another workspace, which will give us more respect. And I think respect really has to do with this feeling of safety. We talked about, you know, a minimum amount of pay as a piece of safety. People love, you know, surprises and fun things kind of outside of work, but they really love reliability and safety in the workplace. And a huge part of that is making sure a person is respected and feels respected at work.
Yeah. Well, and that's a big one. And right now it's on leaders to make these changes in the workplace, because most companies are hurting for help. And so having the humility to look at the way I treat my people, the amount of work we're asking them to do. I mean, especially since we're all short staffed, the demand to work harder and to do more becomes the norm. And
burnout is a huge situation right now. I've talked with probably two or three people in the past couple of weeks who are in very high level positions in their organizations. They have taken on the jobs of all of the people in their department who have left, you know, and are now feeling disrespected because of just the very intense work situation that they're in right now. They're also holding the responsibility of, you know, sometimes entire departments of the company. And so they feel like they can't leave or they can't take space because of all those responsibilities. And then, you know, at a certain point, people just decide, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. Bye.
Well, and everybody's hiring, so I might as well just go across the street for maybe a little more money, or maybe not even more money.
Yeah, so then if that's going on with your person, then you have to figure out, like, okay, help them. You know, what are the pieces that you can set aside that don't need to happen? What are the things that have to happen? And then what are the pieces that you can hire out for? And if you're trying to hire out for a position that's a mid-level position, then maybe you hire for an entry-level position and you find a way to train the person up. So that you're not competing so much in that pool, especially if you can't afford to be in that pool.
Right. And I think another huge piece of creating that respectful work environment is, how do we have tough conversations? How do we have it when I don't think I'm being disrespectful, but you think I'm being disrespectful? You know, I don't think I'm doing anything wrong, and yet you feel like you're completely burned out and disrespected at work and all of that. And it, again, it's on the leaders at this point to be great role models for having tough conversations. And you talk about tough conversations through the trauma-informed lens. What does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah. This is something that I've really been integrating into my work over the past year and learning a lot about. I'm not a doctor or a therapist or anything like that, but what I've come to understand is that when the body is in a state of stress, the blood goes out of the organs of the body and into the limbs. And so when the blood is in the limbs, it is not nourishing our systems. Yep. It isn't helping us to think and to respond in thoughtful ways to issues that are coming up. It isn't helping us digest. It isn't, you know, so there are a lot of issues
getting
that show
us ready
up
to punch somebody in the face and run out of the room, right?
Heck yeah, exactly. Yeah. So instead of taking care of our organs and all of these things that are going on, we're like trying to fight this person, right? So there's that piece of it, right? Like the physical health of the body is affected by stress. Mm. One part. The other part is that when people are constantly in a state of stress, there are responses that the body goes into. One of those responses is fight. Exactly, like we're talking about. One is flee, so you run away. One is freeze. So like if someone says something crazy to you, like it happens all the time with harassment. Someone's harassed at work and they don't know what to say and they just kind of stand there and then they walk away. That's freeze. And then the other one is fawn. And fawn is something that we see a lot in the workplace, which is I'm going to tell you exactly what you want to hear so I don't have to actually talk about the issue that's going on. And so just having an understanding of those things and thinking about it as you are in conversation with your staff can help to kind of tease out what's going on and in some of the interpersonal dynamics happening in your company.
Well, and I think this is such an important thing to think about is that this person is talking to HR, which can be a loaded emotional moment anyway, even though I'm here to protect the employees, that's the job of HR. And oftentimes it's still stressful for people. And so approaching some of these conversations as if this person is in that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. I just did it right.
All the four F's.
They're in, like talking to them as though they're in that 4F place and their body's pumping adrenaline into them so that they can are ready to run or punch or like not die is so important.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a way to kind of introduce a tough discussion is just, we need to have a tough discussion right now and let that kind of sink for a second. And then go into saying what you need to say and allow for the variety of emotions that can come up. I think, you know, what you're saying about HR being the place where people can go to talk about things is the way that HR should work in organizations. But a lot of times what HR does is like sweep it under the rug or they find out about something and then they have to take some kind of like legal action about it. And so in the HR department, really making space for the person and the well-being of the person. And also any kind of protective things that need to happen for the company is a delicate balance. And I think often it's too much on the side of legal protection and avoiding government fines.
Yeah.
And less on the side of really caring for the employee as a person.
Right. Well, and I love that opening. I talk about that a lot in my, you know, Conquering Challenging Conversations workshop is like, you might want to start by saying, hey, I want to have a tough conversation. It might be a little uncomfortable, but here's what I'm trying to achieve in having this.
Yeah.
And I love that opening. And some people are like, well, don't you think that'll make them freak out more? And it's like, no, it makes them realize that, you know, it's uncomfortable and, but understand why you're having the conversation, which I think is again, about protecting the employee, protecting the company. I'm kind of in the middle here and I've got to achieve this, but I also want to make sure you're taken care of too. And by
another good one that I learned too is when you want to give someone feedback, ask them first, can I give you feedback? And I've been in a situation where someone asked me if they could give me feedback and it was not the time. I was like, no, not right now.
Yeah.
And later we were able to come back and actually have a really good conversation, but I was in the middle of a fight flight response. And so I wasn't able to have a good conversation about what was going on at the time. So that can be a really useful one too.
Well, and most of the time people are going to say yes, just because, but you gave them the opportunity to say no, and they've chosen it. So they're going to be a little bit more open to it. I love it. Another question for you that something you brought up earlier that I think is a oft misunderstood thing that makes people uncomfortable. What's a microaggression? You talked about people putting up with them at work. What is that?
Yeah. So microaggressions are sort of, let's see, the way that I think of them is when I say things that have a negative effect on the people around me based off of the way that they are different from me. And I'm not conscious of what I'm doing, but it is aggressive toward the other person. And unconscious bias is another thing that kind of fits in with microaggressions. Unconscious bias is when you do not realize that you are being biased against a group of people. For example, people of color or people who have disabilities. This shows up a lot in hiring, which is a place to start if you are looking at a group of employees and seeing that there isn't a lot of diversity there, is considering whether or not you may have some unconscious bias that is enacting itself in the way that you're designing your jobs, the way that you're recruiting, and who you're hiring for the position.
Yeah. And I, so many people pass this off. They hear about it and they're like, oh, I don't do that because I'm a good person. I would never do that. But it's one of those things that I always talk about in emotional intelligence training, is understanding that your intention and your impact can be completely different. And though you are a good person and you don't mean to do all this bad stuff, it is happening and hurting people. And so having the, again, the humility to open your eyes to the possibility. I know a lot of HR teams are removing names from resumes, for example, just in case there's an ethnic name, in case there's, you know, my grandma's name was Doris. There aren't a whole lot of Dorises born in 2012, you know, 12 or whatever, when we might be hiring these people. So taking names off just to eliminate that, you know, I don't know. Are there other ways that you're recommending people figure this out?
Yeah, I worked with a restaurant group that, wonderful owners, very much care about equity and fairness and justice and restorative justice, and found that just like most restaurants in this country, people of color were working in the back of house in the kitchen, making less money than white people who were working in the front of house. And over the course of a year, this group had, you know, significant turnover, like is common in that industry, and had the goal of creating pathways for people who were working in the kitchen to work in the front of house. And looking at the census data for their county and their employee pool, and comparing that census data with their employee pool, and trying to have more representation of underrepresented groups. And they were able to make significant progress over the course of that year.
And it's just, and so, go ahead.
Yeah. So looking at objective sort of data like that, and, you know, where you are in your company versus what, you know, maybe your county or your state looks like, is a good one to kind of start with.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's being intentional and looking at, not ignoring it because you don't think it's a problem, but looking at it and saying, is it? And then doing something about it. I love it. I love it. Well, Candace Elliott, there's a lot of different places on your website where people can learn and, you know, good tools and stuff. Where can people find you?
Yeah. So I have a newsletter that goes out every month. The sign up is on my website, fortressandflourish.com. And I hang out on Instagram quite a bit. So my handle there is Fortress and Flourish. And I would love to get to know you.
Great. Thank you so much. We will get that all put in the show notes so that if you need to reference that, you can go grab that. Candace, thank you so much for all your input and your insights on HR. Any other tips you have for people as they're trying to retain and attract people?
I think the main piece is to, again, like I said before, just be really clear on what the job is and what you're looking for, and to create as simple as possible a pathway from having a candidate to hiring them.
All right. Love it. I love it. It was so funny. I saw, as I was passing some fast food chain the other day, and it said text to apply. And I was like, wow, I can like text somebody to apply for a job.
Text QR code.
Make it as easy as possible. I love it, Candace. Thank you so much. And thank you everybody for listening. I will put all this information on the show notes for you so you can get in touch with Candace at Fortress and Flourish.
Thank you so much for joining us on episode 185 of Dancing in the Discomfort Zone podcast. You know, I think this, one of the biggest things in this conversation is to have the humility to look at it from somebody else's perspective. If you're in HR, make sure you're considering the employees, considering their experience, considering where they are coming from and what's happening emotionally for them when they're having a conversation with you, or what's happening in their lives. And then if you're facing HR, to face it with curiosity rather than animosity, assuming they also want to protect you as well as protecting the company. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, we've got another great episode and a great opportunity to dance in the discomfort zone with me. And Bonnie, I will see you then.